I listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
This is going to be a long Reading Rainbow session, just to let you guys know, but it is going somewhere. And it's probably not going to be that funny of an opening, but maybe we'll get there by the end of the show. From July 10th to the morning of July 11th, the 1902 council meeting proceeded predictably, with his keynote speeches, welcomes, prayers, and panels, all occurring without Washington, Wells Barnett, Anti-Lynching Bureau report, which noted 2,658 lynchings since 1885 and 135 lynchings in 1901. Numbers that she said indicated two or three lynchings per week during the previous 17 years. That got the most press attention, local press attention. But by the afternoon of the 11th, the behind the scenes manipulations of Washington's minions emerged, throwing the council into chaos. Breaking with the scheduled program, there was an unexpected call for a report from the nominating committee, which recommended that T. Thomas Fortune be president and Bishop Walters become chair of the executive committee. The maneuver brought protests from Monroe Trotter, Wells Barnett, Fanny Barrier Williams, and W.B. Du Bois, among others. But that evening, Washington arrived in St. Paul to mute the complaints sufficiently for the nominating committee recommendation to go forward. Ida and Nelson Cruz, head of the organization's Immigration Bureau, were the only officers of the council to resign in protest, but the delegates voted not to accept either resignation. It's not clear what their status was by the end of the meeting, but the episode effectively ended Ida's work with the Afro-American Council, adding insult to injury as far as she was concerned. Fanny Barrier Williams replaced her as the one woman with an executive position. She was elected corresponding secretary. It was wonderful to see how completely your personality dominated everything, Scott gleefully told Washington after the close of the meeting. From the moment that you reached there, you were the one center of interest, much to the chagrin and regret of our friends, the Barnetts, especially. Now, in this case, they're talking to Booker T. He's talking to Booker T. Washington, and Booker T. Washington apparently had it out for Ida in this situation and wanted her off of the board. The militants, of course, were disgusted. We might have expected Professor Du Bois to have stood in the breach here, opined Monroe Trotter, who would later characterize the meeting as calamitous, described Fortune as Washington's henchman, and concluded that the coup was for the sole benefit of getting the Age editor an appointment in the Roosevelt administration, which the council had endorsed by the end of the meeting. While we were trying to get into the bandwagon, Trotter concluded about Du Bois, he is no longer to be relied on. Unbeknownst to Trotter, however, was that Du Bois was in the middle of preparing the Souls of Black Folk, which would, in less than a year, mobilize the first major opposition movement to Washington's leadership. So, also of note here, Booker T. Washington was very much into like assimilation talk at the time. It was still kind of revolutionary at this time, but Black people was kind of moving to the next phase and being like, nah, it's not about, there are Black, we need to admit there's bad Black people and that's the problem that's holding back, but we want white people to recognize the good Black people. It's like, no, white people are just racist. In the interim, no one must have felt more glum about the recent developments than Ida. The loss of the Afro-American Council to the Tuskegeeans closed the best venue she had to exercise her leadership and subsidize her anti-lynching work. By 1902, the Bookerites also prevailed over the American Press Association, leading the broad acts to subsequently conclude that the Council, Press Association, and National Negro Business League were all one and the same thing. Back home, Wells Barnett received another blow. She and the Conservator, that's a newspaper, had been waging a war against the New Bethel minister, Reverend Abraham Lincoln Murray, who had replaced Reverend D. Ransom. Sometime between 1900 and 1901, Murray was accused of sexually harassing the wife of a church board member. The woman in question was said to have a reputation that was beyond reproach and had filed formal charges, but despite Ida's efforts to get the minister removed and the damning editorials in the Conservator published approvingly by the Chicago Broad Acts, the church board refused to investigate the matter. Shout out to me too. Another minister, Archibald Carey, pastor of the AME's Quinn Chapel, came to the support of Murray, and Ida found herself at odds with the pastors of the two major churches of the denomination in the city. Finally, the bishop of that district, Abraham Grant, whom Ida had once called to too uncultivated for the position, was summoned to Chicago, and though he had promised Ida that the matter would be adjudicated, no action was taken. As Ida told the bishop, the refusal to censure Murray left her no choice but to leave Bethel. I had a family of growing children, Ida explained in her autobiography, and all my teaching would be null and void if I continued in the church with a man who had become so notoriously immoral. With his parting, with those parting words, Ida left the church, which she had married, established the city's first black kindergarten, and helped lead mass protests against injustice for the Grace Presbyterian Church, founded in 1888 by black Presbyterians from Tennessee and Kentucky. The black women's clubs completed Ida's alienation. Despite Wells Barnett's hopes, the election of Josephine Salone Yates as president of the NACW, National Association of Colored Women, did not disturb the power of the organization's triumvirate. The offices of the Black Illinois Federation were dominated by Nagawans, and Ida had even fallen afoul of the president of the Ida B. Wells Club, Agnes Moody, who had been elected in 1901 as the second vice president of the NACW. As Ida recounted in her autobiography, the rupture occurred when the IBW Club was invited by Mary V. Plummer, the white reformer who had been secretary of the Chicago Anti-Lynching League, to become a member of the predominantly white League of Cook County Clubs, an organization dedicated to coordinating the work of women's organizations. The invitation also included a spot on the league's board, and Ida, without informing Moody, hastily accepted the offer and the board position. The IBW president was understandably furious and apparently did not accept the explanation that there was a pressing deadline to accept the position and that she was unable to contact Moody. No one in the group had telephones at the time, Ida noted. There is no indication that the rift was healed before Moody, who had a history of heart problems, died in 1903, and it can be reasonably assumed that Wells Barnett's behavior did little to endear her to other members of the IBW or the other clubs. Hey, welcome to the Black Gospel Tales podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen,
and we're live on a Tuesday, I think, ready to do some podcasting. That excerpt is from Ida, Sword Among Lions, which, you know, I've been reading on the show for a while now. Great book if you want to know about Ida B. Wells, by Paula Giddings. And that's kind of near the end of the book, and that's talking about all these bridges that were burned, all these things that this pioneer established, like, the numbers and the factual trends and the narratives behind lynching in America, went and risked her life to report on these stories, went to towns where she had to wear disguises, where she had to leave, you know, with people on the foot of her heels ready to kill her if they found her, where she could not go back to Memphis where she was living at the time, under threat of she would die if she went back to Memphis. And through whatever beefs, whether you know some of them you could argue were her fault, I'm not trying to say she's like some perfect person, but through all these different, you know, activist beefs, you know, activists be having beef, man. Is like today you see it, it's just on Twitter. That's, it's never changed. It's never been different, you know.
It was never kumbaya.
Yeah, within that part I read, there was probably four or five different factions of beef that had, you know, some including Ida, but some that had nothing to do with Ida B. Wells. But all of that stuff to say, like, she was kind of frozen out of the narrative, and a lot of her work and activism was kind of glossed over and easily forgotten, you know. She died before she could write her own autobiography, and her daughter found the book, if I'm not mistaken, that she had not finished. And you know, that was just really like a big clue into like how important this woman was, because the annals of history were not going to include her. The people that we do look up to, all had their own reasons to not fuck with her, including other black women at the time. They're like, they were, you know, the woman ran her own, the Ida B. Wells Club was like, I don't fuck with Ida B. Wells. Like, it was that
bitch's name got to me. The hell is this?
It was that fucking bad. You know what I mean? Like, to just think about that. But the work she did is incalculable, you know? She, and what she had beef with Frederick Douglass, all these prestige people that we have been taught in our history books and in our Black history classes and in Black History Month when you're in high school and junior high school, there's not complicated legacies that they're teaching us. They just teach us Frederick Douglass. He was an abolitionist, a great man. You know, George Washington Carver, and they just teach like these almost factoids, right? Ida B. Wells just not covered, you know. Well, maybe she is now, but she wasn't when I was growing up. I not that much. Is. You know, like maybe they would mention her loosely, but not up there with King, you know, not up there with some of the great poets of the Harlem Renaissance era, not up there with, like, it was kind of like this, you know. Also, she did, you know, she was around, you know. And all that stuff to say was, yesterday they were announcing the Pulitzers, and of course they had you know, a bunch of people won. Shout out to Nicole Hannah Jones, who did the 1619, I think, New York Times piece. She won.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really dope work, great podcast too, associated mm-hmm. with it.
And that woman got fucking harassed off of that.
Mm-hmm. All because that story has never been told through the eyes of Black people. It's never been a story.
It's always been some kind of a white glossing over it versus just here it is, here's are the facts, these are the things I've learned, and these are the connections that I've made.
Right. And so Ida B. Wells yesterday was awarded a posthumous Pulitzer for outstanding and courageous reporting. And I thought that was like, that was dope. You know, because she has put in, like, she put in all that work and really went unregarded in many cases until, you know, like I said, recently, when she literally started this work. Literally, you know what I mean? Like, no one was keeping tallies of this. No one was going out and interviewing the Black people these things happened to.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, hey, that nigger was a rapist, we killed him, and then no other part of the story. And she would go out there, and she was so brave, she would put it in the paper. You know, and the truth was so fucking volatile to white supremacy that they were like, we're going to kill this woman. When we get our hands on her, she's a fucking dead person. You know, like, they burned down her printing press where she, you know, had her paper in Memphis. Like, they it was essentially a death sentence. She put her life on the line. And because people was petty, because people didn't like that she was ambitious, they didn't like that she wanted, you know, her name on, you know, she wanted her name in things that men were only supposed to be present in, you know, whether they were Black men or not. She wanted her name in things where only white women wanted to be present in. You know, there was a march where there was supposed to be this women's suffrage feminist march, and they didn't want Black women marching with white women. So they had a fucking beef over that. Like the things, and of course they blamed it on, like, well, you know, the women from the South, they just feel a different way, Ida, and we just don't want to stir any feathers, we just want them here. And it's just that thing over, it's always somebody else's turn, it's always next. Now it's kind of infuriating because she has to die, and then we have to wait over 100 fucking years to be like, oh yeah, that was Pulitzer worthy. You know, she literally fucking had to flee for her life telling the truth. And we know it was the truth, you know, and the reason, and I think like I said, it's a long opening and I'm getting to a point here, but I was very happy to see that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, yeah, because I didn't know that. I knew about the 1916, but I didn't know about Ida.
Right. But, 1619.
My bad.
But then also, today, they released a video. I saw this article last week, but, you know, I didn't cover it on the show yet. I didn't want to kind of get into it because not that much information was out at the time. And I, you know, with these things, information comes out, you have to wait, you know. And I try to be accurate on the show and not necessarily first. But the video finally came out of Ahmaud Arbery, who was killed by these two white men in Georgia while jogging.
What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I read this for my own personal whatever a few, maybe a week or two ago. and it sounded real sketchy. Like, there was according to the white people who essentially killed him, you know, lynched him, as people are referring to it, it's a modern day lynching essentially. According to the people who did it, they were like, yeah, there was like a report of a robbery in the area. We was tired of
people getting that bullshit, don't they?
Fit in the description,
right? Okay, it was robbery in the area. I'm fucking running like with no bag of money. I have nothing on me. You just targeted me,
right? They said they believed he was a burglar, and then of course they he's just running like down the road jogging. Like, you can see the video and everything. It's out now. I'm not gonna play it. I know, Karen, you don't want to watch it. I know nobody wants to watch it. I don't want to watch it, but I saw it, you know. And he's just jogging down the street, and they went and took their truck and like parked in the middle of the road in front of him. And when he ran to go around them, essentially they accosted him. There was a struggle over a shotgun. They shot him, and he died. He was 23 years old. And of course, in the article I read, you know, you start seeing the excuses already, because this happened in February 23rd. It's now May. These white men were not arrested. They did not go to jail. They are not facing trial. No charges were pressed, nothing. And the reasoning was, well, it was stand your ground. And in that article, it was like, but there's video of it. And I thought to myself, now what are the fucking odds that this video comes out and black people are gonna see it a completely different way? Because it had, you know. And then the guy who shot him, he used to work in the office of the district attorney, if I'm not mistaken. So like, even that person is, you know, it compromises the people who are supposed to press charges or not press charges, because they can't be unbiased. You have worked with this office. So of course the people that were in charge of pressing charges and not pressing charges decided, ta-da, we're not pressing charges, you know. And so it kind of brings it all home to me, is like, Ida B. Wells, his work over 100 years ago, anti-lynching work, you know, recording these tragic events, and that legacy is still alive today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in the so many of these people that cover these things, so many black journalists, people's Twitter accounts, you know, people are still keeping that alive, you know, because it's still happening.
Yes.
Which is the craziest part. It's still fucking happening. You know, you know, and I'm glad people are actually, some people might find it to be salacious, but I'm glad people putting it in the headlines of their articles. It's lynching. This is a lynching. You right. Killed this man
for no reason.
You didn't know shit, and you killed him because you could. Because
you motherfucking could.
And you got away with it because you could. Yeah. So the Georgia district attorney now vows to bring the shooting of an unarmed black man to grand jury. So I think the pressure of social media, and then when that fucking video came out, it was like, okay, well, yeah, now we have to do something, you know, cause it was, that's the thing that's crazy to me, is they cover their ass, but it's always going to come out. You can never hide these things. Someone has all of it. Someone will find it all, you know? But yeah, I'm of the opinion that the case should be presented to the grand jury of Glenn County for consideration of criminal charges against those involved in the death of Mr. Arbery, according to the statement by District Attorney Thomas Durden, based in Hinesville, 70 miles away from the shooting scene. Durden is the third DA to have a case after potential conflicts of interest prompted two other prosecution offices to recuse themselves. A spokeswoman for Durden said the office would not answer any questions or make any comment beyond its short written statement. Durden did not outline what charges he'd seek against those possibly responsible for Arbery's slaying. It was also unclear when a grand jury could be convened to hear evidence, as courts in Georgia are prohibited from impaneling a jury or trial jury through the, at least June 12th, as the nation fights the COVID-19 pandemic. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing he didn't open back up. The government opened in Georgia, but not, okay. Anyway, I have no control over the suspension due to the pandemic. All however,
right, go eat and get your hair cut and shit like that, but okay.
Right. However, I do intend to present the case to the next available grand jury in Glenn County. Lee Merritt, a lawyer for the victim's family, posted a brief video clip to Twitter on Tuesday that purportedly shows Aubrey tussling with his killer. The footage, which appears to be taken by a motorist coming up to the scene, could not be immediately verified by NBC News. The video clearly shows Mr. Aubrey jogging down the road in the middle of the day. Mr. Aubrey had not committed any crime. There was no reason for these men to believe they had the right to stop him with weapons or to use deadly force in furtherance of their unlawful attempted stop. The men who chased down Aubrey have been identified by police as Brunswick resident Gregory McMichael, 64, and his son Travis McMichael, 34. The older McMichael, with his .357 Magnum and his son with a shotgun, told police they believe Aubrey might be a burglar and chased him in their truck.
But that's still not your job. That's why you have police officers. That's not your job.
What am I supposed to do when I'm not a burglar? Has anyone thought about this? What am I supposed to do? A random non-authority white man and his son roll up on me with guns. What is the protocol for that? And I don't want to hear shit from no white person about it, because white people can't even stay inside the house for 2 weeks without getting guns and getting vests and getting flags and going outside and standing in front of the city hall
fucking mask
talking about their fucking freedoms. This man couldn't even exercise, you know. We decided that you look like a suspect, so based on our authority, we gonna do what we want to do. McMichael stated that the unidentified male began to violently attack Travis and the two men then started fighting over the shotgun, at which point Travis fired a shot, and then a second later there was a second shot. Just random second shot, you know, no big deal. Also, like, if you pull a gun on me, it's fight or flight. Like, I'm either defending myself or I'm running. You can't just fucking, like, you can't just act like randomly I just attacked a man who was worthful. You pulled up in front of me, stopped my path, pointed a gun at me, started yelling. The fuck do you think I'm gonna do? In Georgia? Let you just kill me? That's what I'm supposed to do? Aubrey, a former high school football player, was a health buff who jogged nearly every day, his family said. Gregory and Travis McMichael could not immediately be reached for comment. So who gives a fuck about them though? But yeah, all of that stuff made me think about, you know, Ida B. Wells and the legacy she left behind and how long it took for them to even honor it. You know, they could have done this any year between, you know, the establishment of the Pulitzer Prize and now. I don't know why it took till 2020 to say, oh yeah, this is might be the most some of the most important journalistic work in the history of the United States, if not the most important work.
and a lot of this has to do with racism and sexism. A lot of that shit plays the fact that she's a black woman. They don't never take anything we do seriously. Our work is constantly erased from everything, and unless we have people that advocate on our behalf, a lot of times other women who a lot of times they don't listen to, it's very hard to get these things recognized. I'm pretty sure that they're the people that have probably pushed for decades, and this is probably the first time that they actually even was like, well, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, in a weird way, this is why I'm anti-gun in general, because some people are gonna go, well, if the black dude would have had a gun, then he might could have. And I'm like, the point is, whatever the law is not to protect us ever. The gun doesn't even protect us. You shoot them, you go to prison. They take your life. Like, the shit is a rigged system. You know, I can't fuck with Killer Mike on that. You know, I understand people think this shit is a solution or whatever, but it's not. You know, you can own a gun legally and get hemmed up. Look at Mr. Span. Like, they don't give a fuck, man. So, like, it's not for us. I'd rather nobody had these fucking things. They're just tools of death, and they fucking casually take our lives so fucking easily. And they face no real repercussion, man. They were gonna let these motherfuckers walk if it hadn't got viral to Twitter, if it hadn't been on Facebook, you know, if a couple black outlets hadn't started covering the story.
Did somebody's video camera recording
or yeah something? Yeah, I told you it's a video of it. I watched it.
Like, is it a video they record? Like,
no, they didn't record it. Another car pulling up had a dash cam and happened to see it. And the video came out.
Shit. Okay, I knew you said video, but you never said where it came from.
Yeah, so yeah, that, like, this is the shit that I'm talking about. It's just, you know, this, I didn't reach that conclusion lightly, you know, but I fucking hate guns because of that shit, you know, because essentially, and I get the impetus for why black people feel the need to have them. This isn't me being like, we need to put our guns back and then let the white people keep that. That's not what I'm saying. It's just the idea that they can even protect you is even flawed. Because if this would have been the opposite way around, we heard a white man was doing something in our hood, so we stopped him and killed him. But we went to court and expected the DA to feel like, hey guys, no big deal, no charges, sound like y'all were standing your ground. Mm-mm. Just off of your account, because when you murder somebody, you really just leave you yourself as the soul, the storyteller. And then it becomes about who believes who. And people believe that white man's point of believe those white men, their right to say whatever the fuck they say and just be trusted. If my black ass shot some random white dude because I thought he looked sketchy, I'm going to prison forever, if not death penalty. You know? They were even trying to say, like, well, he has some criminal stuff in his background. In the article I read a couple weeks ago, which is another reason I didn't read on the fucking show, because that's the playbook. They tarnish us.
Drugs, they love drugs.
Yeah, too. We die, they tarnish us. He had 3 parking tickets. So, hey, you know, hey, yeah, who knows? Maybe he was a thief, you know? Even if and then to the ultimate extent, even if he would have been the fucking burglar they are talking about, who gave you the right to roll up on somebody in broad daylight in the middle of the road and kill them?
You have no authority to do that. That's not your job.
So, it's just, I don't know, man. That shit is frustrating. You know, sorry to start the show on such a down note, but I don't know. In the way my brain works, all that shit felt connected. You know, Ida having her work essentially eroded, not recognized, and lost to history, then getting her recognition in 2020, but then the thing that she was working on still fucking happening. You know, black life in America, this is some shit to deal with.
Yeah, that's why it's a never-ending battle, and that's why you have to be vigilant about certain things. And I understand that we, quote-unquote, as black and brown people, have freedoms that we never had before, but we really ain't free. Mm-hmm. And that's hard for people to understand. Yes, you have more freedom than you had before, but you really ain't free. That equality thing that's promised to white people, we ain't got that yet. So until we do, it's one of those things where it has to be a vigilant thing. It's not equality as we want to be white. It's equality as just leave us the fuck alone.
White dudes have literally been walking around with guns, fucking mask on, shades, camouflage, vest, all fucking month long. They've just been going around and fucking standing in public in big ass groups. But the fucking people, the politicians inside the city halls and inside the capitals are the ones putting their vest on, scared they're gonna get killed. But we're the threat. They see us as the threat. You know, like, that's crazy. It's so fucking backwards. They kill us because we're not the threat. You know, they kill us because they're the fucking threat. And then yet they have the fucking audacity to walk around like, someone gotta get these niggers under control. Ew. Black Lives Matter is a bunch of black identity extremists and all this shit. Like, they walk around like we are who they are, you know, like,
because they have to believe that in order to justify their actions.
It's like when somebody in a relationship cheats and then immediately starts thinking, well, the other person must be cheating on me. It's like that, where we ain't did shit, we sitting at home minding our business, you know, but now all of a sudden, because you suspect, everybody gotta be suspect. You know, that's crazy to me. You killed another unarmed black man dead for what? Like, what the fuck did that help?
Nobody.
You know, and I don't care what their fucking mentality was or any of this shit when it was done. I don't believe them.
Nope.
And I also don't fucking care. Well, we were scared. You scared? So you scared? You get in a truck run after a man, harass him, and pull guns out? That's what your fear does?
You got out the motherfucking truck. If you scared, why don't you just keep going?
Like, that's what your fear does? You scared for your life? Like, it's the impunity that they operate with, you know, that, you know, and then the lack of consequences to that, because the world does solidify their impunity. It you know, it doubles down on it. It says, yeah, you're right, you can take this black life, it doesn't matter. You know, the same people tell us we're supposed to obey the police, pushing the fucking police in the chest,
spitting in their face.
You know, was it blue lives matter, or is it white lives matter, or is it only white lives matter? You know, that's why they couldn't fucking understand the concept of Black Lives Matter. They kept throwing an only in front of it, because they've never felt that. They've never had the experience of two, T-O-O. They've never had the experience of Black Lives Matter two.
Like, okay? Also in conjunction.
They've never had to experience that shit. They've always been only them. It's the difference between white power and black power.
Oh yeah, two different things.
It's only for them. It's exclusively to this whiteness. That's where my head is right now. It was just, like I said, super frustrating to see that shit. Definitely pissed me off, and confirmed exactly what I thought. I didn't even see the video till today. I read about this shit like 2 weeks ago, and I was like, I know what happened. Like, these white people's account, him being, he attacked us, and then, you know, he got some criminal stuff in his record. I said, this playbook, how many times we seen this?
It's the same playbook, dog.
They've been criminalizing our existence since they fucking put us in cuffs and put us on this fucking shore, man. They've been doing that. You know, when they were lynching black people, you know, during, you know, Reconstruction and all this shit, and post-Reconstruction, that shit was always about putting us back in our place. And then, you know, this threat of this monstrous black man, you know, we got to get him under control. Got to do something to him. You know, oh, he slept with my daughter. He's a rapist. I got to go kill this motherfucker. Can't have none of these other whites thinking that shit, you know. So it's just to see it still happening. You know, it's so easy to take us back there, I guess, or to take me back there. Let me speak for myself. It's so easy for me to go back there, you know, and to be angry and stuff like that. And it does make me angry, and that's part of, you know, and it makes me sad too. You know, that's part of this experience, and that's part of this show. That's part of our platform. I know it's a comedy show, but ain't all this shit funny, you know? So anyway, I felt compelled to talk about that to open. But yeah, shout out to the Pulitzers for Pulitzers. Shout out to them for 1619, Ida B. Wells. I know there was a black man, a gay black man who won for poetry. Like, there were several different people. Even This American Life, which is not a black show, but they won the first like audio Pulitzer.
This American Life does some awesome work. Like, I like when you talk about journalism, they do that old school journalism where you be like, well, goddamn, like, I knew it took out the investigation and the things that they find. You're like, you know, some of this shit take months and months of calling and emailing and shit like that. Like, they do a great job.
Yes. You know what's crazy too, man? Like, that was, for all the, like, I'm not my ancestor shit that our generation, you know, tries to put on t-shirts and stuff sometimes. Obviously not all of us, but there's a contingent of ignorantly woke motherfuckers that think, you know, they the first niggas to ever deal with oppression and say, I have a problem with this. Man, back in Ida's day, motherfuckers would have ran up on these dudes. Like, that's just what it was. It was, I mean, not every single time, but a lot more times than y'all understand, a lot more than we were ever taught in school. Our people was like, get our guns and go find one of them motherfuckers, and then dare them to come back over here, and then we gonna see.
Yeah, everybody wouldn't turn the other cheek. You know, this thing where we, yes, a messa, and then backing down and crossing the street and all that shit. Everybody was not like that. The anger and the rage and the frustration and sadness and depression and wanting to scream till you lose your voice, that shit ain't new. That shit is not new. Every generation of black people feel that frustration.
Like, they've been out here just chilling since February 23rd or whenever they killed this man.
Walking around, they just been being free,
doing whatever
they want to do.
Doing whatever. You know what I mean? Like, don't ever disrespect the ancestors like that, because straight up, we not them. You know what I mean? Like, people was putting on their motherfucking, like, putting their lives on the line to avenge the lives of other people's taken. And not find no fucking peaceful protest, not with no signs, none of this shit. Just run up on your house and, like, we gonna get the justice we deserve, you know? So, or burn down some white part of town or some shit like that. Like, it wasn't all sweet, is my point, you know? So, you know, that rage that we feel inside, we've been feeling for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yes, sir.
It's never gonna be sated, because this country is... This is America. This is what this country is. This is not, you know, we're not these altruistic things. We're not these fucking flyover flags. We're fucking protesting against a virus trying to go get it and killing black people with no repercussions. That's America, you know? So, you know, when people, I think sometimes people probably listen to the show and feel like, extremely liberal people probably listen to the show and feel I'm not left enough and shit. But it's not that I'm not left enough. It's just I don't think none of that shit can happen here. Look what the fuck they do to us. Socialism not gonna fix this.
We don't even care for all ain't gonna fix this, baby.
None of this shit is gonna happen. None of this shit is possible here. This is fucking tainted soil. You know what I mean? Nothing can grow here. That's why I don't believe in this fucking country. So it's anyway, let's sing the song.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. A reading rainbow.
Finish your thought. You cut yourself short.
Cause I was getting mad and I was getting emotional, I didn't want to cry on the show, so I just stopped.
This is a show, motherfucking show.
Well, I mean, but yeah, this is why I don't begrudge, you know, Beyonce and them getting money. This is why I don't fucking care if black people get their feelings hurt when someone brings up that it is our responsibility and our duty to vote. I believe in that shit.
Me too.
And I'm not ashamed to believe in it. And I don't give a fuck if it makes you feel bad. It's all we got. We got one bullet in the gun. And we're fighting a fucking war. You know what I mean? Like, this is all we have left. And, you know, it's why I don't care if Joe Biden's a perfect or even good candidate. I don't give a fuck. You know, it's always been about mitigation of harm in this country. We don't get to fucking dream. Because these dreams are never going to come true. Not here, not ever, you know. So I don't know, it's like to listen. I'm not trying to knock people for having dreams. I'm not trying to knock people for being optimistic, but I can't join you in that, you know what I mean? Because how the fuck can you believe a country that would elect Donald Trump right after President Obama is this country that's ready for this fucking leftist movement? How can you believe that? You know, like, what, you gonna tell me you gonna walk outside and jump off a building and fly? Like, this, nothing about the history of America should make you feel that way. We're always fucking cut out of everything. Even when we have these movements in these ways, it's always some fucking catch. It's always some shit. They hate us more than they fucking love this country. They hate us enough to kneecap this country so that it'll never fucking grow the way that the American dream is pitched to everybody. They fucked their own American dream up to get to us, because niggas might get a little bit of it too, and we can't have it. I'd rather be broke. You know, I'd rather die of COVID-19 if it's killing these niggas too. You know, that's the country. So, you know, sometimes I feel, and this is something that, that I know is an internal thing, but sometimes I feel like I'm letting people down. And, that's not something that, it's something I'm working on, because it's not a feeling I should have. It's not something I'm doing to anyone, being myself, believing my beliefs. You know, these are backed by science and history and shit. But sometimes I feel like, damn, I'm not meeting people at this like high road that they're at. You know what I mean? This optimistic like place of like, oh yeah, it's gonna be all right. We're gonna do this. It's gonna be better. And I'm not denying history. I'm not saying like, oh, things are worse than ever. Like, I'm not saying shit like that. But to look at this and tell me it's a 5-star meal is a slap in my fucking face. You know, to tell me it's even capable of being a 5-star meal is a slap in my fucking face. Like, these are the scraps. You know what I mean? This is the trash we are eating out of. This is not a good place. This is hell for us. You know what I mean? Like, everything gotta be better than this. And if you fucking take that knee like Kaepernick, hey, get the fuck out of the country then, nigger. Go back to just solidifying what the fuck they are, man. They fucking hate us so goddamn much. That's crazy. It's a slap in the face. Ida B. Wells doesn't get recognized until 2020. Dead. She can't do shit with that. You know, like, I don't know. It just seemed like such a rigged, fucked up situation, and we're put into it, and the only thing we can do is try to like stave off as much as we can for our children and our people and the people that come behind us. And I think that's why I get so furious at the idea that people would slack shirk that off like it ain't shit, you know, or throw out some pie in the sky as it'll just be like this if we just call. It's not. We can't even be an ally with these people. They fucking hate us. We can't. We just have to work with as much as we have mutually interested to get what we can. That's all we got left. We don't have shit else. You know? Like, we're not. And every fucking idea has been thought of. Whether it's we going back to Africa and fucking starting our own shit. Whether it's fucking we gonna have our own communities and lead them out. We gonna integrate and we gonna be nice. We gonna fucking riot and burn the shit down. We gonna march and be peaceful and sing songs. We like, it don't fucking matter. All they hate us more than any of that shit works. This is crazy that we still here. Is all, you know, that's the feeling that I got. And so, like I said, I didn't want to get too angry about the shit, but I don't know how people can look at this shit and not be angry.
Yeah, because the thing is, I do get mad, I do get angry, I do get upset. There are things that bother me, there are things that get to me, but I know for me, personally, I am still hopeful. But that's one of the things that helps me tick, personally. Like I said, we kind of balance each other out, because sometimes I can get so extremely to the other side. You get but like, hey, Karen, come on now, you know, rein some of this in and look at what's really happening around you. And I understand that it has to be a balance there. But like I said, I know me, I could not function if I had no hope. Me personally, mm-hmm. I just couldn't do it. I have to have something in me that tells me that it will be better. I didn't say it's going to be the greatest. I didn't say it's going to be the best. I just said it will be better. You know, I personally have to have that within me. Because hope is the thing that gets me up in the morning. Hope is the thing that makes me realize that, even though the world is it can be and is a place that can just beat you down, that there's always a tomorrow. You know, I have to have hope that no, there's no perfect white people, but there are some white people out there that actually do care and do have hearts and are trying. Because to me, if I was like that, I would just be in a dark place and I would just give up. I know me. I would like, fuck it. Fuck them. What's the purpose? What's the point? Like, I might as well do what the fuck I want to do.
I'm not saying I don't have any hope. It's just, it's grounded in realism. I don't believe in fairy tales is all I'm saying. Like, a lot of this shit is fairy tales. You know, it's, like I said, I try not to engage on some of it because, you know, I can control myself. I can control my point of view on things. But I don't know. I just can't be in denial about this shit. And I think so many people have been in denial about the seriousness.
Agreed.
Which is why we're here.
Right.
You know, Michelle Obama said something, and of course people took it out of context or whatever, or they may have taken it out of context. Let me just say that. But she said something and niggas jumped in her shit again, for like that last time we did a whole fucking episode about how the shit was completely out of context and uncalled for. We played the fucking video on the show.
Yeah, it was something Obama said at a speech or something she said at a speech, wasn't it?
Right. It was at her, they have like a summit every year or whatever. Oh, right. And it was at that. But with Michelle Obama this time, there were a couple quotes floating around. As a matter of fact, I should probably find these quotes before I start talking about it, because I know that
while you're searching for that, but yeah, it has to be a balance, and I've learned how to balance that. Like it's a balancing act, and yes, you have to stay based in reality, because like you said, you can't be so far in la la land that you miss the boat. But at the same time, I know for me, I can't be so angry that I'm just in I think for me, I would be in a permanent anger if I didn't have hope.
Well, that's the thing though. I am always angry.
Oh, I
am. I might be funny and all that shit, but I'm always angry too.
You know, I'm angry too. It's just for the fact that hope it doesn't lash out all the time. But yeah, it's put like this. It's a low burning anger flame that burns in my heart constantly. I just don't let it out all the time.
So here it is. This is the quote. And like I said, it's definitely skewed to be taken out of context. The title of this article on News One says Michelle Obama says she understands. Trump understands, the only thing in quotes in this sentence, understands Trump voters, but quote unquote our folks who didn't vote felt like slap in the face. A lot of cherry picking of the quote. So she did I guess she was talking about her it was her documentary coming out on Becoming, on that's coming out on Netflix, so we'll get to hear it for ourselves. But she said it takes some energy to go high. We were exhausted from it. When you're the first black anything, she said, you know, talking about Obama and her being the first couple. You know, the day I left the White House, it was painful to sit on that stage. And then a lot of our folks didn't vote. It was almost a slap in the face. And so, of course, people were saying, you know, this is clearly about black people. She clearly is saying black people don't vote. I understand, or didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. I understand the people who voted for Trump, the people who didn't vote at all, the young people, the women. That's when you think, man, people think this is a game. It wasn't just in this election, every midterm. Every time Barack didn't get the Congress he needed, that was because our folks didn't show up. After all that work, they just couldn't be bothered to vote at all. That's my trauma. So of course people are taking our folks to mean black folks, which I don't agree with. I think she's talking about the people, literally the subject of that previous sentence, which was the people who didn't vote at all, the young people and the women. Now of course it won't be as salacious unless we take offense to it and say she means black people don't vote and all this shit. But let's not even give her the benefit of the doubt. Let's do let's say she really did just only mean black people and nobody else. Fuck that sentence before that where she said people who didn't vote at all, young people and women. Fuck that part. Let's say she meant only black people. Black people didn't turn out enough to vote to help you know, in the midterms and to get Hillary Clinton to win and stuff. So I wouldn't feel bad if that's what the fuck she said. And
it is a slap in the face.
What, like, fucking vote. What the fuck is the problem?
Right. Like, them niggas didn't vote, then got mad and offended when people was like, bitch, your vote was not suppressed. You could vote. Nobody took away your right to vote. You had the freedom to go and vote. Like, you chose not to.
Like, if you chose not to vote just cause fuck it, I don't care, then I hope you do have your feelings hurt. Who, like, why, when the fuck did we get so precious about everybody's goddamn feelings around shit like that? Like, clearly, that's not what the fuck she meant. Mm-mm. But if she meant that, okay, so you offended, so what you gonna do? Not vote again, you stupid ass? Do you see the fucking country burning around your ass? Do you not see this shit? You need some more evidence that she was fucking right? Listen to black women, except, you know, when they talking and shit. We say we should listen to them afterwards. I saw Mark Lamont Hill on Twitter talking about something where Michael Jordan's mom told him to, like, take the Nike contract and not Adidas. And he was like, that's why we should listen to black women. I'm like the 94% of them that voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, listen to black women, or listen to them just conveniently as a fucking slogan to put on a goddamn t-shirt because you don't really give a fuck.
No, super dumb.
You know, as if black women are monolithic anyway. But the point being, like, that doesn't even make sense. You don't, people take that advice when they feel like it. Mm-hmm. You listen to the ones you agree with, the ones you like. You voted for fucking Jill Stein. Like, what are you talking about? You know, it's that type of shit. That nonsense is out there. That's what the fuck she's mad about. That's her trauma. And I don't fucking blame her, because it's my goddamn trauma too. You know, you listen to people to be so fucking casual about this shit that is literally killing people, and then bitch every fucking day since 2016. Come every on. Fucking day I gotta listen to these people.
Come on.
Bitch, as if they weren't complicit. You cannot have, you cannot want all the credit for Hillary Clinton losing, but none of the blame for Donald Trump winning. That's not how math works. So either you're part of the fucking problem, you're part of the solution. It's that fucking simple. People say they hate our political system, but I'll tell you this much. That's the part that makes sense at the end. It makes it real easy to be like, these are the people on your side and these are the people not. These are your two choices. These are the people that care about your life and want to protect it and protect people's marginalized people. And these are the people that actually want to attack those lives. Like, there's not a lot of choices. There's not a lot of difference between, there's not a lot of gray area between those sides. White people get to run around saying both sides are the same, and fucking snowflake special misfit black people get to run around saying that shit too. And any other black person with their fucking brain working and their eyes working is like, these motherfuckers are not the same. Like, the rest of us are not saying, that's because these white folks is perfect. I loves it over here. We're just going, these motherfuckers ain't the same. One of them is like, I don't like you, but you can live here. The other person's like, die, nigger, die. And y'all was out here trying to tell me that's okay. So, yeah, she didn't mean it that way, clearly. Mm-mm. But y'all are the ones who take it that way. I'm glad you took it that way. You need content that bad. You want to be the victim that bad. Good. Keep being a victim. You're useless. You're not helping. I'm glad you're offended.
Be offended enough to vote.
Right, offend your ass down to what you gonna do? Not vote again? Who gives a fuck? You're useless. My brother told me something a long time ago, and I'll never forget. I think it all the time. He says, "If you're not useful, you're useless." Now, some people would think, "Oh, that's like almost like an insult," but essentially, it's the truth. If you will not be of use, there is no use for you. What the fuck else can I do with you? Usefulness is an attribute. You know, I'm not saying it in the skeevy way, like I want to use you and I want to take your money, and no, but to be of use is a virtue. So yeah, be fucking useful or leave me the fuck alone. Anyway, but yeah, seeing people cry foul over that bullshit, man, it's like they're so determined to try to twist it into the Obamas are the real problem, and while Trump fucking, you know, just goes around and completely destroys everything in this country, and his people are out here. Like, you literally can't take your black ass outside without a mask right now. But yes, the Obamas, let's do tell how they, that's the real problem. Let's be mad at Michelle, that'll fix it. You know, so you mad at Gabrielle Union, that'll fix it. Like, at what point is that black man killed in Georgia, at what point is that trial gonna go to fruition and then, you know, run up against one of them Trump appointed judges? Has anyone thought of this yet?
Yeah, 30% of the some of them judges, like up to 30%, are people that he put in there.
Like, I'm just sick of the shit, man. So it's, you know, I hate to turn it into that type of show where it's all angry and shit, but god damn, man. Like, many people have a fucking hand in this, and then when you turn around, they be like, oh my god, who killed this, our only chance for hope here, who killed our only fucking chance? It's like, nigga, the knife is in your hand, blood is still dripping off of it, you part of the fucking problem, you killed it too. You don't want no responsibility in this shit, you know? Like, it's just, this is stupid. All right, let's get into the show stuff, I guess. Oh fuck, coronavirus, right?
You got us a bop.
Let me go look and see if I can find a coronavirus song real quick.
I've been liking these bops lately.
Yeah, a lot. Everybody sent me the Big Gretsch song, which is dope, but I'll probably play it on the feedback show or something. It's not named coronavirus, which is what I tried to go with. Oh, here's a new one. It's called 6 Feet, You Got Coronavirus. Didn't we do this one?
Probably so. I don't know.
Well, it's called, but it's about 99%.
Is it explicit?
I don't know. Oh wait, yeah. Wait, we did that. Oh, one. We did that one. Hold on, let me find a different one. How about Blue Bucks Clan? Is that, like,
are you sure?
The Bloods version of the Ku Klux Klan? And why is it still Klan? Why wouldn't it be Blue Bucks Bland? You know what? I'm gonna play it anyway.
I get fly as fuck, I don't wanna stop. Bottom of my feet, got coronavirus. My niggas came for the hoes, but they want the violence. But once they on your ass, I can't tell them nothing. All this to the face, I ain't selling it. In the trenches shooting dice, I don't play cards. Speeding from the cops in the race car. Facing woods underneath race stars. Heard they took your shit, they can't take ours. Bus playing, we them niggas you can't pick on. In the club, standing on the couches that you sit on. When my bitch at the house telling me to bring a bitch home.
And this bitch ballin' like I'm Jim Jones. Bitch can't curse to me, I bring the rent home. Nigga, when we went to conference, you got picked on. All these buttons on these pants, yeah, they clipped on. I just bought my bitch some Uggs, yeah, to slip on.
Don't be
telling me to text them when I get home. Bitch is saying I ain't fat, I'm just big bone. Remember beating niggas up, getting sent home.
This is not a coronavirus song.
Flintstones. Mad at.
He said coronavirus is starring in the title of his coronavirus.
But the rest of the song ain't got nothing to do with coronavirus. He bringing bitches home. He gambling in the street corners. The hell is this?
I didn't promise they'd be good. I said they were going to be coronavirus songs.
Cause they went broke. Going up like some cola in a Mentos.
$1,000 shoes on my big toe. Balenciaga's big as fuck, but they fit though. Big ass culling in like a limo. Flex on these niggas, ain't no gym though. Clan making niggas leave, man, run off. She want me to fuck, but we gotta drop your son off. Lame ass nigga front peas, I'ma run off. Your slippers strapped up, I can't come off.
Wow, that's terrible.
That was not good.
That's the worst coronavirus song I think we played so far.
Mm-hmm. I don't lie. I didn't like that one.
Blue Bucks Clan. That's terrible.
A thumbs down, baby.
It was offbeat.
You just said coronavirus one time.
Yeah. He just said coronavirus, put it in the title because he knew we were searching for it. But it was a horrible song, homie. Anyway, coronavirus news because, you know, this shit is still out here.
Yeah, it is.
Still fucking with people. Let's see where we should start. Wendy's is running out of beef.
Where's the beef? Apparently not at Wendy's.
1 in 5 Wendy's is out of beef, analyst says, because of the meat shortage, because, you know,
they order that shit in bulk.
Some of these plants had to stop producing meat, so the food supply chain is so breaking down.
Gonna be the spicy chicken, chicken nuggets, chicken salad. Oh, you know what? That might explain when we went to go to Qdoba's and I wanted some barbacoa and it wasn't on the thing.
We didn't want to go to Qdoba. We were gonna have it delivered.
I mean,
to the house.
That's what I meant. And, we was trying to order through the phone, and I want some barbacoa, and they having it probably because they didn't got no beef.
Ground beef was still on there though. I don't know why, but yeah, they running out of beef, man. And then yeah, so maybe that's what it is. Maybe other restaurants will be affected as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that they have those conditions and stuff, like, it's just a powder keg for getting. It's like plants like that, and then like prisons are just powder kegs for this. Saw another thing where 192 women out of like 196 inmates tested positive for coronavirus in one of these facilities.
Good, like, God.
Yeah. Like, this is the nightmare that people said was gonna happen. You can't social distance in a fucking 6x10 cell or whatever.
Mm-mm, but no walls, just bars.
Yeah. Let's see. Amazon vice president quits after the company silently fires employees who were worried about COVID-19. The vice president of Amazon has stepped down from his position due to the company firing protesting workers. Taking to his official website, Tim Bray, former vice president of Amazon Web Services, explained why he quit in dismay. Firing whistleblowers isn't just a side effect of macroeconomic forces, nor is it intrinsic to the function of free markets. It is evidence of a vein of toxicity running through the company culture. I choose neither to serve nor drink that poison.
Come on.
Bray revealed that he reached a breaking point and snapped when the company fired two employees who put together a staged climate walkout. Back in March, former employees Marin Costa and Emily Cunningham created a petition requesting that Amazon take better care of their employees during the crisis. Costa and Cunningham suggested that Amazon expand sick leave, offer hazard pay, and child care for its warehouse workers. Amazon also fired an employee by the name of Christian Smalls for leading a protest in response to the lack of support from the company and a poor pandemic response to COVID-19. However, Amazon's reasons for firing Smalls was due to him breaking their quarantine policy after being exposed to the virus around the to attend the protest. As for Costa and Cunningham, Amazon claimed they broke the company's policy by asking coworkers to sign petitions. VP shouldn't go publicly rogue, so I escalated through the proper channels and by the book, Bray continued, adding that he decided to quit in solidarity with those who have been fired. Remaining an Amazon VP would have meant, in effect, signing off on the actions I despise. So I resigned. The victims weren't abstract entities, but real people. Here are some of their names: Courtney Bowden, Gerald Bryson, Marion Costa, Emily Cunningham, Bashir Muhammad, and Chris Smalls.
Bray
explained that the recent firings are the evidence of a vein of toxicity running through the company culture. Furthermore, from the beginning of the outbreak, Bray said Amazon's response to the worldwide crisis has been chicken shit and designed to create a climate of fear against its employees. At the end of the day, the big problem isn't the specifics of COVID-19 responses, that Amazon treats humans in the warehouse as fungible units of pick and pack potential. Only that's not just Amazon, it's how 21st century capitalism is done. Damn. Now I do wonder what he thought he was signing up for when he joined Amazon, but also, like, it's dope that he didn't just leave but also said something about, like, why he left and how fucked up it is.
Yeah, you know, because it's one of the things where he didn't think he was signing up for that, you know, because people take job, you know, work at companies all the time, and you get in there and you be like, oh, this ain't what they promised me, like, you know. And the thing is, I'm glad that he spoke out, and I'm glad that he said something, because a lot of people won't and don't, you know, they're gonna criticize him. Why'd you wait till now? You know, a lot of people see fucked up shit at their regular 9-to-5 all the goddamn time. What you do? You look, you blink your eyes, you keep on trucking because you want that paycheck.
Well, also, he did go through the proper channels. He didn't just give up. He,
right.
He was like, this is fucked up. I'm raising the, you know, same thing Gabby did with America's Got Talent. Like, you try to work within the company. It's not like I just ran to Twitter and started some shit. It's like, hey, you guys have a policy, a procedure for this. I'm saying these things do need to be addressed. And then they went, fuck it, we're not gonna do that. So
yeah, but again, because I know it also had to be frustrating for him working there when you see these commercials and all the commercials, where do the warehouse workers be? They be in masks, they be social distancing with the smiles on their face. He'd be like, oh, this is some bullshit.
Right. Let's see. New York governor started to order grocery stores to administer coronavirus tests. Yeah, this is what I was saying earlier, that this is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
These are actually the frontline workers, not, these are the essential workers. Mm-hmm. The essential workers are the ones that should be getting these tests, not, it shouldn't be based on, like, if you can afford it or how, if you're a celebrity or whatever, unless you're a celebrity that comes into contact with a lot of people. I get that. Like,
right.
When they were testing sports figures and shit, I actually was like, that's actually smart.
Yeah, actors that travel all over the world, that makes
sense. Yeah, that was actually smart. Who's more likely to have been in an airplane and been around a crowd of fucking people?
Correct.
It's these people. But yeah, at any rate, I actually think this is a great idea, and I think more people need to be implementing stuff like this.
Yeah, like you said, it needs to be grocery store, people that work in the fast food industry, restaurant workers, like, those are the people, drivers, like, people that work for, like, Grubhub, people that's, like, constantly out there, those are people that need to be tested.
Yeah. Michigan now has the highest mortality rates from coronavirus in America, while protests still continue. Yep.
Wonder why they mayor was like, don't give a fuck about y'all protesting. This shit still locked down. Like, you out here is the reason why I have to keep this in order.
You mean the governor?
The governor, yeah. Yeah, you standing out here, walking up in here with these guns is the reason why I have to keep this, stay your ass at home in order. You're not gonna change my mind.
Big and Gretch.
Shout out to them governors that's like, oh, y'all think y'all threaten me? Don't care. I'm not lifting nobody's rules.
Yeah, she came out and said that, you know, she was sickened by how much it was racist and white supremacists out there. She was like, this is the worst of the state right here. Like, that's not the values we gonna uphold. But yeah, they have the highest death rate of coronavirus in the U.S., even as the state continues to be divided by protesters who want to end the state's strict stay-at-home orders. It has far fewer overall cases than New York or New Jersey. The state has more than 4,000 deaths as of Saturday, which gives them a fatality rate of 9.13%. According to the data, most of the fatal cases of coronavirus appear to be centered in poverty-stricken areas in the city of Detroit. According to data, which surrounding counties accounting for at least 70% of the cases and 81% of the deaths. These figures come as the state continues to be divided by some of the militant protests against Governor Gretchen Whitmer's lockdown after her declaration of a state of emergency. Last week, hundreds of angry protesters, some armed with rifles, stormed the state house, frightening lawmakers who had to wear bulletproof vests to protect themselves. So, yeah, and my main thing is, they don't care. You saw the place that they named as the main hotspot is Detroit.
Right.
Poor black people live there.
Mm-hmm. They're like, why we gotta stay locked down for them niggas?
Yeah. You know, so of course they don't care.
She's like, but y'all dying too. I hope y'all know. Y'all in here breathing on everybody now. Everybody in here could possibly get it. You're spreading to each other, and then you're gonna be sick and in the hospital in the next 14 to 21 to 30 days.
A Michigan security guard was killed, and police are investigating, and apparently it was over a face mask dispute.
People is killing me with these face mask shit. They is like,
well, they killing security guards.
Yeah, they not literally killing me. They killing over face masks. I'm like, what is the big thing about it other than people just going, you can't tell me what to do?
He told them they couldn't come into the store because they didn't have a face mask on, like, I think the daughter or something. The people tried to go in anyway. He told the cashier stuff, don't serve them, and they left. Came back, and the father and son had a gun and shot him in the back of the head and killed him. Yep. So police are investigating it, and everyone involved in the dispute was black. So, you know, that people acting crazy out here. Missourians who tipped off county about lockdown rule breakers fear retaliation after a detail release. Yeah, so they have this thing where you're supposed to report people that are violating social distancing and gathering and stuff. Someone hacked it and then released it on Facebook with people's names and all this stuff.
Why people ain't shit? Because people are like, I got to stay in the house, the fuck is this?
The names and addresses of approximately 900 people in Missouri were released as part of a media request under the Sunshine Law, which allows for the release of information submitted to a public agency, except for wrongdoing and abuse tips. To me, I'm like, isn't this them reporting on wrongdoing? St. Louis County has urged the community to share details of anyone not following the guidelines in response to the coronavirus pandemic and noted in terms of conditions that information may be shared publicly. However, some people may not have read the small print submitted tips via online form and email from the end of March.
Because they wouldn't have told you. They wouldn't have told you.
Many had asked for their communications to remain private. Still, the documents published online ended up being shared on social media, and one man, Jared Tosh, helped it spread further when he posted in a Facebook group. Here you go. The gallery of snitches, busybodies, and employees who rat out their own neighbors and employers over the pandemic. Because, of course, he don't believe in the pandemic.
You're risking their lives and all that shit, you know, and it's one of those things where people are gonna, if somebody dies and my family member die for this, I'm looking at you like, the fuck? Like, why would you have a line like this and then you not protect the people that's calling in?
The complaints resulted in 29 businesses receiving citations in April, and now people are worried they may get fired because some of the people were reporting on companies they work for, like, hey, they got us in here, they not following the rules,
right?
I'm not only worried about COVID, I'm worried about someone showing up at my door, showing up at my workplace, and getting me fired for doing what is right, said a tipster named Patricia. When there is something that happens next time, I'm not going to feel safe or protected enough to call the local authorities.
Right. That's what's going to happen. And this shit going to spread and it's going to get bad. And y'all going to be like, ain't nobody calling a lot. No, bitch, because you told last time. What the fuck I'm going to call you for this time?
Patricia has lupus, and two other people in her household have autoimmune diseases, which put them at high risk of getting seriously ill or dying if they contract coronavirus. We're in a society where doing what's right doesn't always get rewarded. We have to be extra careful because we don't have the strength to fight this. I saw a lot of businesses that were non-essential that were open and had lines outside. Parking lots filled as if the order didn't matter to them. And that was kind of frustrating. It's just, this is what the fuck people think is smart to do. Report on these people.
And my thing is, I don't understand how you're going to have a hotline like this and be like, well, your shit could be public. Right. You should tell people this when you say you call the hotline. This information could be let
well, they
people
do,
know.
But they do, but it's in small print.
It's in small print for fucking reason.
And they know if they told people that, then they wouldn't report. You know.
And guess what? They know now. So guess what? They're not going to be calling.
Which means the people that violate the rules are winning.
Right.
Because now I'm not picking up the phone. I'm just going to ride by that party, and they're going to keep partying and spreading the fucking disease. A video of California doctor stoking conspiracy theory should never have gone viral. This is vice.com by Jason, I think, Kobler. And I won't read the whole thing. I'll just get to the summary of it. So there's a couple of YouTube videos that were deleted, or a video that was deleted with a couple of doctors. There were California emergency room doctors who criticized the state's COVID-19 shutdown. By the time it was deleted, it had been tweeted by Elon Musk, viewed more than 5 million times, and texted to this author of this piece by conservative family members. The doctors have become heroes among a sect of the right that wants to immediately reopen the economy regardless of the human toll. The video was and is dangerous, but by deleting it, YouTube has made these two men martyrs in the right's ongoing war, in which they claim Silicon Valley and the left are censoring conservatives. And so essentially he says the video shouldn't have been deleted. They should have left it up and maybe put like a disclaimer or something before it. What do you think?
I don't know. I can understand you taking it down, and I can understand you leaving it up. Like, I know that might sound wild, but I could see both ways from their perspective, because they actually don't give a fuck. Truthfully, they let all types of shit go out there all the time without disclaimers and shit like that. Cause you said it's YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, YouTube don't give a fuck. Yeah, YouTube don't care.
Yeah, here's what I'll say. Delete the shit. Delete it. Ban the people from the platform. I don't understand, and this is such a fundamentally white point of view. Yeah. This thing where it's like, no, man, it should have never went viral in the first place. Well, it's too fucking late. They don't have a billion employees at YouTube, and you know they don't do a good enough job of catching shit when it goes up. They catch shit when it goes viral and they like take it down.
Right.
You know, not every algorithm can catch this. Not a person in, there's not enough people in the fucking world to watch every video that gets uploaded to YouTube to see like if it's gonna go viral or not. I'm sure there's tons of videos like this that don't go viral and shit.
Right.
So his solution was some bullshit. It was some pie in the sky. If I had a time machine, yeah, well, we don't have a fucking time machine. The video's out there. It needs to be fucking deleted. Okay? Because it needs, the other message YouTube is sending when they delete something like that is, we don't stand for that shit on our platform. Facebook still got the video up and people have reposted it millions of times and all this shit. But when that person like killed somebody and like in New Zealand and he had video of him doing a mass shooting, they were able to find a way to take that down everywhere on YouTube, on Facebook. So they don't have the will, and that tells you a lot about Facebook here.
Agreed.
They let that doctor video stay up, and that's why that shit is a cesspool over there. But the point that I'm trying to get to is we have to stop, and by we I mean people on the left, and mostly as white people, but we have to stop letting racist, ignorant, right-wing people dictate the tenor of the conversation by being like, but what about them? They're gonna take this in and they're gonna act like martyrs. They're not martyrs, and who gives a fuck? Guess what else they're gonna do if you leave the video up? Take this and act like the victim. That's what they always do. There's never gonna be a time where they don't claim some type of bias. That's the playbook for this type of personality. And that's not even just a right wing thing.
Mm-mm.
Look at Bernie Sanders people. Anything happen, it's the media against Bernie Sanders and his people. It's never, maybe we fucked up. Maybe that wasn't the best. Or maybe we're just not as popular as we think we are. It's never that. It's always the fucking bias of the media. Certain people love to be the victim in these situations.
Agreed.
Even when they're not. Even when they're the bully, they're the victim. So letting them set the table for what the fuck the response should be is stupid. Delete that shit. Take it off your site. Fuck them. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, and that's why the fuck you can't never have no white people in charge of shit. You know what I mean? That's how we got here. White people being in charge of the internet, these startups and these major fucking media corporations, and claiming no responsibility and thinking freedom of speech means letting people say racist, derogatory shit and fucking buying on those messages and become big ass groups that meet up in real life and do "we will not replace us" rallies, and you just hide your hand and go, I mean it's freedom of speech, if I delete the videos they'll be even more mad. Like, nigga, you could have stopped this years ago. You chose not to. This is what the fuck we have. Start doing your job. Delete this shit. You don't mind deleting me and my friends when we say some shit that you don't like.
Come on, women that are feminists and men are trash.
Right.
Taken out.
Somebody, white people, it's the white people doing blah, blah, blah. Oh, gotta delete that. You banned.
You'll find that one though, won't they?
Right. You know, like, you can't be the people that platform Alex Jones and then, you know, and but you find a way to make, you know, certain politicians and dominant silk shit stay on your websites, but you know, somebody for Black Lives Matter gotta always be fighting a ban or getting their account deleted. Like, yeah, they make their choices, you know, and you can't, and the only reason they care about these people and if their feelings will be hurt and they'll use it as a rallying cry is because they're white people. Because there's actual victims of shit happening out here, and y'all don't never care about us that way. Anyway, fuck that bullshit. All right. How much time we got left?
41.
Okay. All right. We'll probably have to make another session or something. All right. So definitely not doing fucking with black people.
Everybody got 100.
No, that much is true today. Let's I guess do some white people news, maybe.
Yay,
lighten it up with that. Let me get my white people news cover song. Oh man, I saw this one randomly somewhere. I don't remember if someone sent this to me or someone may have DM'd this to me, but it's so good. Let me put it on my screen. Oh, my computer probably gonna freeze, so Karen, be on the lookout
I will.
In the chat for me freezing
and not moving all of a sudden.
Share this shit. You guys know my computer is ghetto. Is anything coming through? Am I moving still?
You still moving. I know sometimes it's okay. Kind of slow. All right.
So that means it probably will load, hopefully.
Yeah, but saying look for the error message. You know, sometimes I'm like, hey, you took too long.
Yeah, it's not giving me an error message so far. But still not sharing my screen.
I hear it. I don't see nothing.
All right, hold on. Let me give me 1 second, guys. I want y'all to see this. Cause this woman is fine. So, you know, I love to share my talented fine sisters with y'all. Okay.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. Yeah, it said totally took too long. All right, let me try this again. Yeah, I don't know. She have no. I was like, this woman had no right to be too fine. This fine, or whatever. All right, is it showing yet? Trying.
It's trying now.
Okay. All right. Now here we go. Her name's Ayanna Witter Johnson. Oh, and she's playing this cello, by the way, guys. Just want to let y'all know.
Okay, can you make a full screen?
I did.
Okay.
It might take a second.
No problem.
Oh, you mean full? Oh, wait. Hold on. I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, buddy.
Oh, my bad.
Nope. No problem. No, it's just a click of a button. You know, it's going to make us smaller later.
Mm-hmm.
Did that even work?
It just might be slow responding.
Try one more time. I think that did it.
That did it, yes.
All right, here we go, guys. Sorry about all that delay. She doing this all by herself. Like it's no.
You don't have to put on the red light. I loved you since I knew you. I wouldn't talk down to you. Had to tell you just how I feel. I won't share you with another boy.
God.
Come on, bass violin, bass cello.
And she did that shit all by herself. There's no band. She did all the percussion is her, like, tapping on the on the instrument.
And she got some good mic. She's singing, and the other one is, like, connected to her, her bass violin, bass cello, whichever one it is. And, and honey, she was doing her thing, her all white, and her gold choker. Come on, gold choker.
She's fine, too. That was the complete total package, okay? I'm about to go to the orchestra now, all right?
Was beautiful.
I didn't know that's what the orchestra was like. It's a little culture. Yeah. That's all. I feel like that's all you need to let me know, okay?
Yeah, they be out there. Cello-ing it up all thick.
For no reason. All right, so that's y'all's man. Reveal, leader of group peddling bleach as coronavirus cure wrote to Trump this week. Yeah, so this is the week that he pitched last week that he was like, you can drink bleach or put it right in the blood. Yeah, so that it was, he got an email from that person, so he was like, oh yeah, I better go say that. Trump said he'll block coronavirus aid for U.S. Postal Service if it doesn't hike prices. Conservatives have been trying to privatize the post office since Reagan, and if it wasn't for Reagan, because the post office actually used to make money until Reagan tried to privatize it and fucked it up, and since then it's always needed money, it's never made money. So it was already doing the thing that conservatives claimed they wanted to do until he went and fucked it all up. And now they've been trying to basically bankrupt it for the better part of what, 40 years now, 30-40 years. So yeah, this is why, you know, so now that they need aid because they were one of the hardest hit institutions by coronavirus, all of a sudden it's, well, y'all better raise y'all prices. Now, I thought Republicans were for smaller government, less money. So now we want the post office to be charging us more? Why would that be?
But the thing is this. They have so many rules and regulations on what the post office, even though they're quote unquote independent, they still connected to the federal government to an extent, because they have rules and regulations on what they cannot do, what they can sell, what they can't sell. Like, they got a bunch of fucking restrictions for something that's supposed to be independent from the goddamn federal government.
It's just kind of interesting, Karen, that's all. It's just kind of interesting to you, boy. Let's see, Trump says briefing's not worth the effort amid fallout for his disinfected comments. So yeah, he got his fifis hurt because people was like, that's the dumbest shit anyone's ever said. You shouldn't put fucking bleach in your blood or UV light in your lungs. And he was like, my feelings hurt. I shouldn't even do these briefings. But of course he was gonna cancel them, then he uncanceled them because he needs to be on TV.
He needs to be.
Trump hosts for massive rallies of 25,000 people this year. Listen, I know I'm not saying, I hope they had them fucking rallies is what I'm saying. I hope they have them. I hope all 25,000 of them show up.
Don't go to Charlotte.
I hope they all show up. I hope they have the fucking rallies. Do whatever you need to do, okay? Y'all go have your rallies, boo-boo, okay? And you know what? I hope some black people come. That's right. I know y'all like, Rob, but black people might die from coronavirus. I know. But you know which black people want to come? Your cousins that's on Facebook talking about coronavirus from the 5G. Go on your ass out there too, playboy. Go ahead and get the coughing on some people, okay? Go out there and get to coughing. Okay, we might be able to suppress day votes for the first time, okay? We're gonna have them two laid up in the house. They're gonna want us to vote by mail then when the coronavirus on their ass. Stupid motherfuckers. 25,000 people. Are you crazy? Are you fucking crazy? There is no venue that can hold 25,000 people with the 6 feet apart. There will be no social distancing. He means regular back to life. No coronavirus cure, just motherfuckers packed on each other, coughing and sweating and spitting on each other. That's the fuck he means. What an idiot. After one tweet to President Trump, a man got a $69 million,
what?
A Silicon Valley engineer tweeted at Donald Trump, that he could get medical supplies. And Donald Trump told New York, the state or whatever, hey, this, you know, not Donald Trump, but the White House, Donald Trump, who told New York, hey, work out a deal with this guy. And they did.
Some fucking rando?
He said he could make ventilators. Some random dude. His name is Joe Pines on Twitter. He replied to Donald Trump, because Donald Trump said General Motors must immediately open their stupid abandoned Lordstown plant in Ohio or some other plant and start making ventilators now. Ford, get going on ventilators fast. And he replied back, we can supply ICU ventilators, invasive and non-invasive. Have someone call me. Urgent. Not a single ventilator ever arrived.
Of course not. Fucking of course not.
A state official speaking on background because he was not authorized to publicly discuss the terms of the deal said New York entered into contract with Orrin Pines at the direct recommendation of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. Nearly a month later, New York has terminated the contract and the state is now trying to recover all of the money it paid the Silicon Valley electrical engineer. Officials refuse to say how much the state had been able to claw back. We're in discussion on a few remaining issues, said Heather Grohl. And I would, of course, say this person that grifted them is a piece of shit, but this is what happens when you have a president that fucking lives on Twitter. Some more who gets a reply on Twitter and goes, yeah. And when you have two different coronavirus task force, one of which he's trying to wind down, the one, guess which one?
The ones that telling facts.
The one with Fauci and Burks on it.
The ones that's doctors. Out there is like, y'all open up this motherfucking country he and wanna it's keep, gonna be worse.
He wanna keep the propaganda one open. The one with his Jared Kushner on it and Ivanka Trump.
The ones that be like, do what you want to. Open the economy back up.
Like, he wanna keep that.
Yeah, death is a part of the process.
Oh, man. All right. Let's get into this white people news, the lighter news.
Let's do it.
All right. Amanda Bynes is not pregnant, also not living in a sober facility, according to her attorney.
Okay.
You know, it's nice and white when you can, you let your attorney speak for you.
I know they got pictures of her or something, though.
I mean, I guess. Let me show y'all this picture.
I guess.
It's not, because it's not... You always do this, but this is not a picture article. This
oh, my bad.
Some of the articles.
I don't know why I think every all them picture articles.
This one just happens to have a terrible picture that I want y'all to see, but.
Oh no!
I don't know why they picked this picture.
Who is that man kissing on her?
She was engaged to Paul Michael, so I guess that's Paul Michael, her okay. ex-fiance.
Ooh, I don't know that white man.
Right. I don't know why you asked. But, yeah, so that's a picture, but no, all of these aren't picture articles.
Okay.
I'll let y'all know when it's a picture article.
I assume they all pictures. It's like white people pictures.
In March, Bynes, 33, shared a picture of an ultrasound on Instagram writing baby on board in a caption. So that's why people thought she was pregnant, but then the post was deleted. And then her lawyer came out and said she's not pregnant. She's not living in a sober living facility either. She's sheltered in a safe location and is doing very well. Any reports that Amanda is suffering from drug alcohol addiction issues are completely false. She is seeking treatment for ongoing mental health issues. We ask for privacy during this time for any speculation about her personal life from the public and the media to see so Amanda can focus on getting better.
At least she's fucking on her mental health issues. Everybody needs some, and this the way things going on now, everybody need to be checked on.
Yeah, I think she was like a child star.
She's been around a long time.
Yeah, so I guess things have gone downhill. Mm-hmm. A news anchor from Spain found himself in an awkward situation when his at-home broadcast included an unexpected guest.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Last week, during Alfonso Merlo's Estada de Alarma broadcast, which he was having to do remotely due to novel coronavirus pandemic, mm-hmm. a partially dressed woman walked by behind him as he was seemingly unawares.
Oh, shit! Mm-hmm. There was some non-communication happening there.
Mm-hmm. Viewers noticed that the woman who appeared to be wearing a bra was another journalist named Alexia Rivas and not Maria Lopez, the woman who that Merlos was known to be dating at the time.
Oh no!
Several fans accused.
I guess he didn't tell her he was going live.
The mistress?
No. The dude should be like text her like, hey, don't come in here. I'm live.
Yeah. So he didn't tell the mistress.
Right.
Right. Right. Here's the thing I'm saying though. What if he did tell her?
Oh, and she purposely did that. Yeah, purposely, like. Yeah.
What if she blew up his spot? She was like, you know what, dog?
I'm about to be the main bitch.
I'm tired of being the side chick. Okay? I'm tired of this.
There's a forecast of rain. Me raining.
Monday.
Come on.
Tuesday. Like, what if that was her? She was like, I'm tired of this. I don't know if y'all can see it in this thing here. I don't know if I have to make my screen big or whatever, but she is let me see if I can zoom in. She is in the
right hand corner.
Yeah, the bottom right hand corner. It's getting a little bigger. Y'all see her? She don't got no drawers on, so you know they been fucking.
Oh.
Like that's
that's why you need to have them tight shots, them shots that just stick to your head. That's why you need to get them filters.
That you need a Zoom background.
Come on, Zoom, Microsoft Teams. You know, people joke about them filters, but that's the purpose of it. You can, you know, or either even if you don't have to, they allow you to blur the background so you can't see shit happening behind you. Bet you that's one time he wish he'd have had it.
What if she thought he had the filter on and that was the problem?
Oh, she might have.
She was like, why you didn't have a fucking filter on? And it like she not paying attention either, because I think she's in the back on the phone.
Right. So she might not even know she's in the shot.
Right. I mean, she know now.
Yeah, she does.
But
at the her time, and everybody else does too.
Yeah, I wonder what that. I have the audio from the phone call actually too. Give me a minute, I could pull it up.
What's up, girl? I'm sucking dick right now. Let me call you right back.
That's how that conversation went.
If you think my attitude,
like, girl, I see you on TV. I know you sucking dick.
Marcos later addressed the incident on the Anna Rose show and said that he had broken up with his famous girlfriend prior to it, and his girlfriend is on Big Brother at the time. So Marta Lopez. If you think that my attitude has not been correct or that there are things that I've not done well, I have no problem asking for forgiveness, although my goal was not to harm someone else. He later reiterated Merlo's sentiment. Rivas later reiterated Merlo's sentiment that he was not dating anyone when they got together. I didn't get into a relationship. He told me he was single, she said, according to Metro UK. We have been seeing each other for 3 weeks. However, Lopez has alleged that she and Merlos had not broken up, but they were simply in the midst of an argument. We were on a break! Shout out to White People News. I have been mad at Alfonso for 4 days.
You're like, you on Big Brother.
4 days. I've been mad at Alfonso for 4 days.
That's long enough.
He didn't want me to do something that affected my family. I did it, and he got mad. Lopez told the Spanish outlet per Metro UK.
Are you sure he might have broke up? She might not have known they broke up, but right. They just broke up.
It's an open relationship on his side.
Come on.
It added that she and Merlos had even been on lockdown together during the pandemic. Damn. You might want to get checked for more than the COVID then, okay? It's a lot of viruses. They ain't got nothing to do with that corona. You might want to get checked out for, because this motherfucker sound like he is community media dick, okay?
Come on.
He is giving everybody the lowdown at the
He's sprinkling the showers on everybody. Ain't he a weatherman?
I forgot.
He's a weatherman.
I don't know.
He might not be, but I'm a joke like he a weatherman.
JoJo says Taylor Swift sympathized with her over loot years before Taylor Swift's own Masters drama. And I'm not talking about JoJo from seeing JoJo.
Oh, because I'm about to say what?
This JoJo appears to be a white woman. Now, obviously, I've never heard of her before, but that doesn't mean she ain't famous.
Right? There's a lot of famous white people. I have no idea who they are.
Just means she's white. That's all it means. She just released her new album, Good to Know, but JoJo reveals that her career was put at a standstill a few years ago due to a seemingly incessant legal battle with her former label. Taylor sympathized with her when that was happening. After releasing her breakout smash, Leave, Get Out in 2004, JoJo became a pop music mainstay with her subsequent hits, Baby It's You and Too Little Too Late. That is three songs I've never heard in my life.
But, if I heard them been passing and didn't know they were her.
But 5 years into her budding career, everything came to a record scratching halt when she sued her former label, Da Family Records, an imprint of Blackground Records, over her contract. During the lawsuit, JoJo wasn't able to release new music, and her record catalog, JoJo and the High Road, wasn't available to buy or stream. Also owns the rights to the late singer Aaliyah's albums, which are still not available for streaming. Do you niggers care now? Now that your precious Aaliyah was caught up in here, Tay Tay on the side of right trying to help these artists get their music to you.
That makes sense. Like, if you try to search up, it's like, it's not available.
Hard R, because y'all know how y'all be acting when it comes to my bae, Tay Tay. She just be trying to help. And y'all can't get out your own way because Kanye, who's a coon, had the nerve to try to interrupt her getting an award. She wasn't doing nothing to nobody. She didn't say fuck Beyonce, I'm taking this award. That's not what happened, baby. Anyway, it made me feel out of control, like a little girl disempowered, JoJo recalls. I felt confused. What I always come back to is, what could I be doing differently and how is this my fault? I guess it just makes me feel more in control to think like I must have done it. It was very hard for me to accept something that didn't make sense. Why would they not want to put in out an album? They weren't putting out anybody's album. To this day, Aaliyah's music is not available on streaming services because they haven't done a deal with streaming providers. In 2013, JoJo finally reached a settlement with her former label, releasing her from her contract and allowing her to put out music again. She released Mad Love, her first album in a decade. Oh my God.
They got my tied up that long.
You put an artist out of work for a fucking decade.
And then y'all talk about Megan Thee Stallion. When Megan was like, no, I'm not gonna be fighting y'all for fucking ever.
Yeah, they always trying to call somebody stupid when they money fucked up. But then they get mad at Gabrielle Union for saying black artists don't always have it the way y'all think. Fame is not money. Fuck you, bitch. Okay.
But it's not.
You famous and rich. Shut the fuck up. And in 2018, to reclaim her voice, JoJo re-recorded her masters and re-released her first albums in 2018. Oh, I love that flex. That's that Prince move. It's like, I'm about to re-record all my hits. Fuck y'all. How about that? A way that I was able to change that narrative in the last couple of years by starting my own company, Clove Music. I had to go on YouTube when I was making these re-records just to listen to albums because I didn't remember. I released these new masters of my first two albums because I was tired of seeing people be like, why did you make your albums down? Why did you take your albums down Spotify? They were never there. I would never do that. Why would I be a weirdo and want to erase my history? That makes, I like money. I like people being able to go back and have access to my songs whenever they want. During the lawsuit, JoJo spent time with Taylor Swift, whom she met through mutual friends. For the uninitiated, here are the degrees of separation. JoJo was close friends with Francia Raisa, best friend of Selena Gomez, who is, of course, BFS with Swift. A few years ago, Taylor had me over her house. Actually, she was just like, I can't believe everything going through. This is so fucked up, so wrong, blah, blah, blah. JoJo recalls the hangout, and of course, she couldn't have ever known that she would go through something similar where her catalog was bought from her. Indeed, last year, Swift's nemesis Scooter Braun purchased her former label, Big Machine Records, and with his masters of her first six albums, Swift says she plans to re-record her masters like JoJo did. But our situations were actually quite different, JoJo says. I was literally being completely silenced. Taylor's in a different position in her career. I was really sidelined and it was pretty hurtful. I don't think that her career is suffering because of whatever happened. They're still available on streaming services. That's the difference. As JoJo, I'm on the side of these women, but at the end of the day, the choice between her and Scooter is vastly different than what I was going through with Blackground. To be honest, I don't have any problems with Scooter Braun. I think he's a really smart man, but it does suck to feel like you're not in control of your own shit. Today JoJo is back in control on Friday. That's her trying to be friends. Scooter, don't fuck mine up. I'm sorry. On Friday, she dropped her acclaimed fourth album, Good to Know, a sensual collection of R&B slow burns. Oh, JoJo, an R&B white girl?
Yeah, I'm assuming that label was black the way you said it.
It did say Duh Family.
Right, I was like, that sounds black.
I don't know how I never heard of this white woman. But you know,
I bet you she got some bops.
Probably. I mean,
I probably heard of them, just didn't know who she was.
Maybe, you know, maybe she one of the people you don't even know she's white, like you find out later.
You got something to play?
Hell no, I don't know this woman's music.
Oh, my bad.
I do got something to play.
I hate to say it, I hope I don't sound ridiculous. I don't know who this man is. I mean, he could be walking down the street. I wouldn't know a thing. Sorry to this man.
Yeah, that's a true statement for me.
That's what I got to play by JoJo. I don't know nothing about JoJo. I'm sorry, Karen.
Oh, no problem.
I could try to find something on Spotify if it don't pull up Casey and JoJo.
You not gonna pull that? Ooh, yeah.
baby.
Yes.
What if she just read?
All my life.
She just remade all of Casey and JoJo.
I know, but I still you're having my baby.
She remake all of Casey and JoJo hits, but then she only sang JoJo parts.
Yes!
She don't do nothing to, ooh, yeah! She just do the...
What must I say? Like, what? How did we get here?
I'm just doing JoJo's harmonies, y'all. I'm a cultural appropriating white woman, okay? Y'all was rooting for me to get free, for me to do this to black people. Alright, so they got Too Little Too Late. Oh yeah, I have heard this. Yeah, I heard this. Say you change, but boy, you know you're big and don't fool me. Because to you, it's just a game. No, it's too little to turn me on. Yeah, that's shit. 2006. Damn, she couldn't make no music since
what,
then.
10 years, my nigga?
Now her number one hit is Fuck Apologies featuring Wiz Khalifa. So
oh shit. Yo, Fuck Apologies.
Yeah, at least she's moved on, man. Too bad what the family did to her. Dog the Bounty Hunter is engaged.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Ain't he racist?
Yes, racist people get engaged, Karen. It happens.
Also, I know that came out the blue.
Were you unaware that racist people can find a mate? They also get married sometimes and have kids.
I know. I was like, wait a minute, I heard that name before. Like, ain't he the racist dude we was talking about not too long ago?
I mean, he's Dog the Bounty Hunter. He's a bounty hunter named Dog.
Yeah, because he had a really popular show that got canceled because of him being racist.
Mm-hmm. And his wife, Beth, died like 10 months ago. Yeah. I know. I didn't know racist people could find love either.
Gives me all shocked.
Yeah.
Man, look, I hear you. It's funny to me too.
Yeah, he got engaged. He has a new girlfriend named Francie Frayne.
Oh shit.
This week the pair were professing their love for each other on social media. I scream and cry, Beth, where are you? Why did you leave me? Then I look up and see Francine and the pain turns to a smile. I love you, woman. Dog 67 captioned on a solo picture of Frayne, who he posted on Instagram on Saturday. I do wonder, is that a look? He's in a lot of pain, you know, his woman that he was with forever died and he's moving on. I get that. Is that the kind of compliment you really want to get?
Right.
I look I'll be like, where's Beth? Oh my God, I can't
see her. I'm in my 70s.
But then I look over and I see Francine.
There she is.
And I say, oh, Francine, you know, I'm going to be okay.
She might need to check on him.
It just don't sound like kind of, I don't know this man. It seemed like it's too soon. You know, like, and maybe it's always going to be too soon when you're 67.
Right.
And you lose your wife. But 10 months later, dog, you still, like, that's just such a backhanded kind of compliment. You know, like, oh, you know, it's just every day I wake up in the worst pain of my life, losing the my one true love that ever I will be able to replace. And then I look over at you, baby, and I realize it's gonna be okay. It's like, what nigga? No. The widower, 67, got down on one knee at a romantic dinner at their home in Colorado 10 months after the death of his wife, Beth, from throat cancer. The reality star told The Sun he's so happy he wants to have the biggest wedding there's ever been, open to all his fans, and what he says, hell of a party. You gonna go to that, Karen?
Hell no.
You not down with the dog?
Gonna be a bunch of moonshine now. I'm good.
He was from Hawaii. I just remember him always talking to the people he arrested. He'd be like, you need to get your life straight, bruh. You gotta do better. Okay. You need to get your life together, brother. And Jesus is what happened to me. Jesus came into my life. I'm like, you still about to send this nigga straight back to jail? Don't be trying to send him to jail with a nice story and a hug.
Nope.
If you really care, let him go. Didn't care that much.
Oh no.
Then he got caught saying the n-word
at the end of the show, because I think his show was like high rated and everything. Then
Francie, 51, spoke out about the moment dog got down on one knee while they were self-isolating together. Oh, there you go. A lot of bad decisions being made in that isolation.
Don't get roped in these bad forevers just because y'all trapped together doing the Rona.
Getting a little quarantine. Next thing you know, it's like, maybe I should marry this man.
Keep taking your birth control.
Like, oh, you know what? Maybe I should be with this man who just lost his wife 10 months ago and can't stop waking up in the middle of the night and yelling her name out. But at least he looks over to me, okay? This racist. I don't know no black people. We can make this work.
They can make you slap somebody.
He must have did now. The quarantine.
He did something.
She said, I wasn't expecting it at all. I think I gone to pick up some food and then I came back and he had all the lights turned down. And this is with just a few lights on and a bunch of candles lit. So when I came in, I was like, wow, this is awesome. He said, come in and sit down because I need to talk to you. Have you ever given your life to Jesus? That's what
I hope not.
I'm sorry, I forgot. I thought I was taking you to prison. My bad. So I put all the food in the kitchen. I came in and he said, I know that God brought you into my life and I don't want to spend one moment of it without you. Francine said, dog got down on one knee and asked her to be his wife. Wow. A 67-year-old man on one knee. That took a while.
Come on. Getting down and getting up.
Dog wants to invite his 12 children, Francie's two sons,
12,
and their grandchildren, but is so happy he says that all the fans are welcome to, saying people need a bit of love at the lockdown. Well, that's what they call it, love at the lockdown. It's a TV show. That's Beth, his ex-wife, his former wife who passed. The couple believe that meeting was fate due to divine intervention, as Francie lost her husband Bob 6 months prior to Beth passing. Oh man.
Oh, they finding over losing their maids.
Dog had left a message on her phone asking Bob to do some work for him, but didn't know he passed away, and he and Francie became friends after that. The couple say their union has got a mixed response from fans, because some are happy for them, others feel like it's too soon. Earlier this week, Dog and Francie were professing to love each other on social media. Dog captioned a solo picture of Francie saying, I scream and cry, Beth, where are you? Why did you leave me? Then I look up and see you, Francie, and the pain turns to a smile. I love you, woman. On Monday, Frayne, who's a rancher from Colorado, reflected on their new relationship in what looked to be a journal diary entry where she shared on Instagram. You never know how strong you are till being strong is the only choice you have. So you cling to God and to his word and with all your might because it's all you know to do. Then one day I looked up from the ashes and there you stood. Wow, God, she wrote, seemingly referencing Dog. Maybe she spelled it backwards. I don't know. In the caption, Frayne shared a Bible quote from Isaiah 61:3, and three words she addressed directly to Chapman: I love you. The new couple, having been shy and gushing over each other on social media, also referenced their religious beliefs in a post from last Thursday that showed them out on a walk together.
Aww.
Out enjoying today's beautiful weather with Lola the Bulldog. We walk by faith, not by sight, living our lives in a manner consistent with our confident belief in God's promises. 2 Corinthians 5:7. That's right, I said 2 Corinthians. I go to the Church of Trump. Just days before Frayne shared a photo of herself and dog snuggled up to one another while pronouncing so excited for this new chapter in the caption. Wow.
I know that's not a Make America Great Again hat, but that's what it reminds me of.
The World War II Vietnam veteran hat?
Yeah, because that looked like a hat to somebody in that group would wear.
Mm-hmm.
It just ain't red.
Yep, so I don't know if it's a grief bonding thing or it's too soon or not, you know. It's whatever for people that live their lives like that out, you know, reality TV, yeah, on camera.
I hope not, but you know, it's just certain things that, you know, as being a black, it kind of triggers you. My bad. I know we ain't white people news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, he is a racist, so I get it. You know, it's a lot. Let's see. Kristen Cavallari gives marriage advice to an engaged couple. Don't do it. Now, we talked about this on Ballsy Sports, but Kristen Cavallari is on the TV show Very Cavallari, and her husband is Jay Cutler.
Mm.
And they got a divorce. They were quarantined on an island together for 6 weeks,
mm-hmm,
and came out
back
of that
and everybody
with a
was like, nope.
And it's a petty divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she wanted to get a house, and he was like, nope, you can't get that house.
She wanted to buy like a $5 million house, and they had agreed she could do it before the divorce. But once they didn't reconcile, he was like, hell no, you can't do it. I don't know if the house is in California, you trying to avoid them marriage story vibes. I don't know. Ask a silly question is what Kristen Cavallari and Jay Cutler are clearly thinking in this video, which proves the writing was on the wall a couple of months before they announced the divorce. TMZ obtained this clip of the now strange couple at an event back in February where they were doing a meet and greet with fans in Chicago as Kristen's Uncommon James store. Okay. At one point, a woman who said she was newly engaged asked advice about being newlyweds in marriage, and Kristen quickly blurted out a very telling answer: don't do it. Everyone had a laugh about it, including Jay, who seems very uncomfortable sitting right next to Kristen, but it sure seems like she was being honest based on what we know now. Not too long after that, she and Jay officially called it quits, with him filing for divorce. But Kristen said in her divorce papers they were close to pulling the plug late last year. They made one last ditch effort. They went south in March. The split has been anything but civil. Kristen accused Jay of marital misconduct, which we found out pertained to them not agreeing on child custody. They're also at odds about a living situation right now, as Kristen wants money freed up to buy a new place of her own. Her fans can't say she's not honest. Damn. You hate to see white love come to an end like that, you know? We get so few examples of pure white love in these day and age, you know? Pure white, Aryan, Caucasian, sanctified holy matrimony. You just don't see it much.
Not that often.
And to see it thrown in the trash when it's under threat from America and all the minorities is sad. Stacey Dash announces split from her fourth husband.
I didn't even know she was married.
Yes, to a white man.
Oh, okay.
And they broke up. She announced her separation. She discovered that he was a nigger lover, and you know she can't have that.
He had to go
She pulled old Clayton Bigsby on him. Okay. Stacey Dash announced on Thursday she was separating from her fourth husband, a lawyer named Jeffrey Marty. Two first names. According to the New York Post, the couple met in 2018 and got married after a whirlwind 10-day courtship. Dash made the announcement via social media, saying, "My husband and I have made a hard decision to ending our marriage." The announcement didn't specify whether there's been an actual legal filing or the two are just separating at the time. "After much prayer, I feel this is the right path for both of us. I wish him nothing but the best. Thank you, everyone, for your support and for respecting our privacy during this difficult time." What could have possibly happened? Man, coronavirus is taking everything.
is taking it all from us.
The 53-year-old clueless actress, they never say more money, because this is funnier, was previously arrested back in September for domestic battery after argument with her husband turned physical. The charges in that case were eventually dropped, and Dash claimed the incident was a marital dispute that escalated. Yeah, and didn't she put white on her, or no, white was put on her arrest report, even though she's not a white woman. Mm-hmm. So, Kristen Cavallari's ex BFF is seeking attention as she posts a pic with a rumored Jay Cutler.
Oh, didn't we just talk about him and his wife?
Didn't we, Karen?
Okay,
you almost have forgot, didn't you?
I'm about to say
in one ear out the other.
I must have talked about that man.
We did just talk about them. Correct. Last season on Very Cavallari, viewers saw Kristen Cavallari have a falling out with her best friend Kelly Henderson over speculation that she was having an affair with her then husband Jay Cutler. Ooh, the whites just got a little spicy. It sounds like this white people news is salt and pepper to taste.
Yes, salt and pepper to taste.
And just days since the reality star and her husband announced they were filing for divorce, Kelly seems to have taken to social media to hint how she's spending time with Jay. The 37-year-old shared a photo on Friday evening with an unidentified man who was wearing Jay's signature rainbow beaded bracelet. What? Much needed happy hour. Happy Friday, y'all, she captioned the post. Child. No, she did not.
They out here doing what that Southern Charm show.
Mm-hmm. That's even more. Oh my goodness. And it wasn't long until Eagle Eye fans noticed the accessory of the untagged gentleman's wrist, which didn't get any positive responses. 100% Jay's arm bracelet. This is shady as hell, commented one. Others thought the post was very distasteful. If this isn't Jay, you're thirsty. If it is, yikes. And I don't know what's worse, if it's him or if you want us to think, but it's really not. Another pen, you knew exactly what posting this would do. So thirsty. One, if it's not him, you know people would think that. Two, if it is him, it just shows how desperate you are. You couldn't find a man not married. And this is in such poor taste, no matter who's in this photo. Starving for attention here. However, a source told E! On Saturday night that it's not Jay in the photo and Kelly was just seeking attention. This is 100% not Jay. This is Kelly seeking attention. That's all it is, the insider claimed. Ooh, that's terrible. My God. Like, how much do you hate your ex? Like, is this some Molly Issa shit? How much do you hate your ex-best friend?
Right?
Y'all supposed to be BFFs.
We ain't gonna be no more.
You would do this to your, oh man. Like, y'all be ashamed of loving hip hop, saying make black people look bad. This make white people look bad right here.
Yeah, dude.
They got a reality.
Hey, girl, I just wanted to let you girls know that I'm a real messy bitch. I'm a messy bitch who lives for drama.
Shout out to the thirsty people that replied back. He's single. Why he can't move on?
Come on.
Meanwhile, on Instagram. Yippee-ki-yay, yippee-ki-yay. Just being a whole white mess over there.
A whole ass white mess.
Let's see what else these whites got going on. I am feeling better. This started as a very angry show.
I'm trying to tell you, white people news will change your whole attitude.
It really will. It really will.
You get enough of who, and you be like, you know what, I feel better.
The FAA investigates Harrison Ford and his plane again.
Oh. Babe, don't be out here trying to take yourself. Well, I'm about to say he ain't gonna be in no more Star Wars. At least I don't know, but you know, don't be trying to hurt yourself before they can, you know, bring you back from the dead or something. I don't know.
I mean, was Chewie driving? I mean, how the fuck he keep getting in all these? This, how he keep doing this? Why is this okay? How many more times can this motherfucker do this? The single engine plane had just landed at Hawthorne Municipal Airport outside Los Angeles when the tower instructed the pilot to wait for another aircraft to make a touch and go landing before taxiing across the runway. But then he didn't, and a scolding ensued. Get across that runway now, the air traffic controller could be heard saying on recording from the tower. I told you before to hold short. You need to listen up. It wasn't just another pilot, it was the actor Harrison Ford, who made the miscue on Friday around 3:20 p.m. What? Dude, this is so unacceptable.
Could have caused a collision. You could have died.
dude, what?
I guess he is out here like Indiana Jones.
A short round on the plane to him. Mr. Jones, Mr. Jones. Man, that was racist. Remember Short Round?
Yes. Yeah. I remember them movies, yes.
Well, Impossible White Man movies do not age well.
No, they don't.
That's just what it is. But yeah, he flew through the... He flew down there anyway, man.
He's like, you get your ass across that taxiway for somebody to hit you.
His music was probably playing and shit.
You know he went in here, motherfucking thing.
I'm in. No, Harrison, no.
No.
We're gonna die.
That's what they told me back in 1986. No, you really gonna die. We don't have stuntmen. You're not on set, sir. You're not on set.
Oh, man. Yeah, it wasn't, yeah, so he did that around 3:20 p.m. You may know him as Han Solo, the swashbuckling pilot of the Millennium Falcon in Star Wars, unfazed by asteroid fields and the Imperial Star Destroyer, but this was not Tatooine. Mr. Ford, 77, immediately owned up to the error, which was not the first time he had run afoul of flight control rules or been involved in an aircraft mishap.
You might need to have somebody else fly, baby, and you just be the pattern.
Excuse me, sir. I thought exactly the opposite. I'm terribly sorry. While there was no danger of a collision, according to Federal Aviation Administration, the agency said it was investigating the effort. Mr. Ford had just landed on runway 25 at the airport in his AVA Husky. The tower instructed him to hold his position. A two-seat gyroplane, which has rotors like a helicopter, had been cleared for a touch-and-go landing on the same runway, which was east to west. His plane and the other aircraft were about 3,600 feet apart when he strayed onto the runway, according to the FAA. Ina Trekokas, a publicist for Mr. Ford, said in an email Wednesday that the actor misheard a radio instruction from the air traffic controller. Yeah, this seems to be a habit. 2017, he did this at John Wayne Airport. So
yeah, then he crashed one time and like fucked up taping.
Yeah, they couldn't do Star Wars because he got hurt. This nigga. Let's see what else white people is up to. Kim Kardashian West and Kanye West have been arguing at home a lot, reportedly, during the quarantine.
A lot of people have been stuck at home like that.
Yeah.
When you're used to your mate, like everybody kind of doing their own thing, and you know, you spend time, but you don't spend like extensive amount of time with somebody, and all of a sudden we looking at each other all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just gotta hope they're okay, guys. You know, we're all rooting for that family to figure it out, right? I'm sure we all agree. Kate Beckinsdale, 46, looks smitten with her new boy toy, Goody Grace, 22.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. She out here robbing the cradle, okay? She out here getting them young.
22, he just crossed over, he drinking 1 year.
Mm-hmm. She on that Ron Perlman, okay? Kate Beckinsdale and rumored new beau Goody Grace look like quite the couple while out fetching groceries on Friday. If I'm not mistaken, she went on a date with that boy from SNL, the one that's not funny, Pete Davidson. She went on a date with him.
Okay.
She went on a date with him, and people was like, damn, he kind of young, ain't he? And they was like, mind your business, okay?
Yeah, ain't nothing wrong. She like her back broke.
Mm-hmm. She want that big dick energy, okay? The English actress, 46, and a Canadian musician, 22, held glove-covered hands while at least they were social distancing, while leaving the trendy Irohan grocery store in Pacific Palisades, California. Now, see, if you doing this right now in the coronavirus pandemic, mask on or mask off, it don't matter. Two people getting that close hanging out, they fucking, for sure.
And they both got whatever they got.
She's just delivering that quarantine for show. During the outing, Kate offered a bit of quarantine approved affection, adjusting Goody's mask sweetly before they headed home. It was no wonder why singer-songwriter Grace was smitten with the actress. Beckinsdale looked typically glamorous while rocking her uniform of skinny jeans and knee-high stiletto boots. She always was fine. Like, they basically made, like, three of them vampire movies on just Kate Beckinsdale being fine and shit. The movies was terrible. Like, I forget which, like, back in the third one, I was just like, I don't even know what's happening no more. Like, these motherfuckers just running around being vampires or werewolves.
I don't think I seen that in
them. Yes, you did. Yes, you absolutely did see the movies with me. One dude was a vampire werewolf hybrid, and he was like her boyfriend. She
Underworld.
Underworld, yes.
Yes, okay, yes. Now I see Underworld, yes.
Yeah.
I think we seen all them shits.
We did. By the end, I was like, I don't even remember what happened.
What the fuck is happening here?
Like, what the fuck happened in the other two movies?
I don't remember.
The vampire world is coming, and for the werewolves.
That
and
shit made no sense.
The werewolves don't play. We smoke too. I'm like, what is it? And I'm an angel. I'm like, nobody knows what the fuck just means.
Them shits went like the Resident Evil. Like, they was like, you was like, huh?
We have Kate Beckinsale and
we're gonna put it on screen
and high heels and tight leather pants. We have a goddamn movie, okay?
That's all that mattered.
It was like how they got Swordfish. It was like, this movie don't make no fucking sense. Mm-mm. Guys, Halle Berry will show them titties for $6 million. We got us a goddamn movie. Get the filming.
And it made its money.
And it made the money back. Everybody's like, you can go see some titties. Just before the internet, y'all. You can go see some titties. Everybody's like, I got to go see this movie. I got to see them in real animated life. I can't see these titties later. I got, like, that's her titties sold the talk whole of the town. Movie. People don't remember that shit.
I do, but yes.
I think the nigga that played Wolverine was in it.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. You just. It was no wonder why. Yeah, so this is them. You say you wanted pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Look, listen, okay.
Them white stilettos, I like them boots.
Her white don't crack, okay?
No, it's Blowfish. That was another movie she was in too.
Kate must just be out there just sipping water and taking care of herself and minding her fucking business, because we don't never see her in no problems and probably just getting dicked down by these young niggas. That's probably keeping her young forever.
Happy being white.
Maybe she is a vampire. You know, that's
they got to be young to keep you youthful.
Maybe that's why she a vampire, okay? Because she like, I'm young.
She's sucking their souls,
and I'm just sucking these young niggas souls out. Okay, they don't know what to do with this. I grapefruit these niggas. They mine forever. But yeah, that's her. She tied her chocolate locks up in a high ponytail and hid her face behind dark sunglasses. Goody looked handsome wearing a classic jean jacket over a t-shirt for the band Operation Ivy, adding a touch of color to his look.
Shit, I'd be in love with a 222.
Yeah, I mean, but see, that's the thing. He 22 and probably got his pick of the litter of women.
That's true too.
But sometimes you need a woman that's seen some things to put it on you. I mean, you know, I don't know that it'll last forever, but you know, she done put some advanced techniques on him. It's like when Ashton Kutcher was a Demi Moore. I'm sure she locked that shit up, man. She was like, oh, the young girls don't know this one yet.
Yeah, you know, and I'm sure, you know, she's a few years older than his, one of them things, but you go, don't talk.
Yeah, I'm sure he's annoying.
Don't say nothing stupid.
Play some of your music, baby. Okay. I'm gonna show you this move that I do with this. I'm gonna warm up some butter in the microwave and do this move that you ain't never experienced before. It's about to change your world. You just keep being handsome and playing music, okay?
Yeah, I just want to look at you. Just bring your dick here. Don't speak.
I don't need to see what's on the TikToks, okay?
I don't give a fuck. No.
Mm-mm. A couple gazed lovingly at each other as they left the shop hand in hand. Though they were wearing masks, the happiness was evident. Ever the gentleman, Goody carried a couple single bag of groceries while remaining close to Kate by hand. So they ain't even, they like, listen, people say you need to get at least a week's worth of groceries every time you go. Trust us, this a week, because all we do is fuck. We don't even.
Oh, we don't be doing nothing else.
We don't.
That and water.
We snack lightly, okay? Their romance came to light on Easter Sunday when the new couple were seen enjoying a stroll together. Oh. He has risen, okay? The couple have also
inspired. A lot has risen.
Mm-hmm. The couple has also been spotted together as far back as January when they were photographed leaving a pre-Grammys party together. The actress has also been commenting on Goody's Instagram post as far back as February, even leaving a heart emoji on one of his snaps. Oh, they together.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm an old married person, but my understanding of the internet, that means it's getting pretty serious when y'all start doing shit like that. Kate was previously married for 12 years to director Lynn Wiseman. The couple wed in May 2004 after falling in love on the set of 2003's Underworld, which co-starred Beckinsale then partner Michael Sheen. Lynn filed for divorce in 2016 and the split was finalized in 2019. Man, so she was with Michael Sheen and then left him for the director of that movie, and then, or for whoever this nigga is, yeah, the director, and then they got divorced because they wasn't gonna make no more sequels,
right?
And then now she out in these streets. Kate shares 21-year-old daughter Lily Sheen with her ex Michael.
He 1 year older than her baby.
That's gonna lead to some awkward sis loves me type of porn. Like, what? I'm not comfortable with that at all. Now you will respect me, I'm your daddy, okay? That's what you gonna say that 20 mm-hmm. There's that girl 1 year younger than him,
right? She gonna be like, if you don't get the fuck out of my face,
he gonna be trying to do daddy shit for her. I'm gonna drive you up to college.
You're not my
weekend.
Daddy.
Oh man, all right,
that's how it would be. No,
I'm properly cheered up, guys. that's we can move on. Yeah, so I guess let's wrap this up with some guest the race before our food gets here, guys. I mean, not guest the race, I meant sword ratchetness before our food gets here. Let me just bring that up on Spotify in the background here. Feel a lot better.
Me too.
It's a very angry start, very frustrating. Black Death always does it to you, don't it?
Come on.
Be on myperfamily.com. 21 and 22, boy, what in the MILFs teach teens is going on over there? A sword-wielding man cuts his neighbor while complaining about loud music.
Mm-mm-mm. What? Oh, poor thing.
Everyone quarantined together, and
right?
Some people got swords.
I had enough of you. You better get sliced up.
Mm-hmm. This happened in Madison, Wisconsin, home of the cheese eaters. Police arrested a man Saturday night after allegedly cut a man in the face with a sword. The victim responded to a banging on his apartment door around 11:45 p.m. When the victim opened his door, he saw 47-year-old George S. Hansen in the hallway, armed with a knife and a sword. According to an incident report, Hansen swung the sword at the victim and hit him with it, causing a minor injury. Officials say the victim pushed his door shut, locked it, and called 911. The victim said Hansen used a knife to damage his victim's door before police arrived. Damn, he's still out there.
He was determined to get you.
He was still outside when the victim's apartment when the police arrived. He claimed he had the weapons for self-protection. Ain't that what
but
they
you're
say?
Trying to get in.
Guess the race.
White.
Yep, and he didn't want to hurt.
What? You're trying to get in.
You already cut my arm. You knifing my door down, but you don't want to hurt nobody. Hansen told police he wanted the victim to turn down some music and that he considered to be too loud. Police arrested him on suspicion of second degree recklessly endangering safety, disorderly conduct while armed with battery. So is he gonna be in jail, or is his neighbor gonna have to like worry about this nigga coming downstairs forever?
All right,
y'all, that's it. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank y'all for listening.
Thank you.
Appreciate y'all.
We do.
Tomorrow, I promise we'll do LGBT news to start the show. Until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.